Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
Today's program was brought to you by Le Creuset, made in France since 1925. The first and finest enameled cast iron cookware and a favorite for generations. For more information, visit lecreuset.com. That's LECREUSET.com. I'm HRN's Communications Director Kat Johnson with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. Fall is finally here, so it's time to get funky and devote an episode to some of our favorite spunky microbes.
Fungi just provide this beautiful, whimsical lens on how the world works. They have so many roles. They're this strange and magical-seeming group of organisms, but they've got it all figured out.
Should you eat the cheese rind? Can you eat the rind? These are like the biggest questions.
We'll answer all of your questions about mysterious mushrooms and crazy curds. Plus, we'll give you a sneak listen to the newest season of Modernist Breadcrumbs. So tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to
Foment About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Rachel Jacobs.
My name is Chris Kuzmi.
And we are your co-hosts through your weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived wherever good podcasts are found and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. It is a beautiful, beautiful fall day. It's November 1st. We had a really great Halloween, a lot of really fun activities. And I'm still buzzing from an activity we did at Fifth Hammer, which was a dog Halloween costume.
Oh, yeah.
We had to cancel it because nobody showed up in a dog costume. But there were a bunch of really cool pups in crazy costumes.
What was who's the winner?
Nobody's laughing. That's okay. I'm sorry. Nobody laughed in the room when I said that joke either. We had some really cute dog, kid judges from the neighborhood, and they picked Pikachu as their winner, but the Fifth Hammer House winner was a guy dressed up as Mr. Clean, and his dog was the Brawny Man, and that was pretty, like the paper towel guy, so that was pretty great. And then the popular choice from the audience was the It Dog, so this dog was kind of this
thing. Oh my God.
It was pretty great. Anyway, but that's all in the past. There are things coming up that we're all excited about, and Rachel, what do you
That's
have
right.
on your
so
agenda?
That's right. So tomorrow starts New York Cider Week, which is deceptively about 2 weeks. So there's a whole bunch of really cool events. If you go to ciderweeknyc.com, you can see a whole bunch of them. There's a lot going on every day, including a bunch of cider pairings at Brooklyn Cider House, a kickoff party at Bad Seed, and Heritage Radio Network is doing an event called... Co-ferment, blending perceptions of cider, wine, and beer from 6:30 to 9 p.m. on Monday, November 5th. If you want tickets, you can just check it out on ciderweeknyc.com and see all of the other cool events going on there. What else is going on this week?
Well, the American Home Brewers Association is celebrating its 40th year this year, and this upcoming Saturday is the 20th annual Learn to Homebrew Day. And there are a bunch of events happening all over the country that you can find out at homebrewersassociation.org. And this homebrew world is kind of what has brought us all together today, even on this show, and I'm thankful for it. All the flavors and just making life taste better and having more fun and the people I've met. And anyway, learn to homebrew. It's never too late. Lots of stuff going on. And if you can't find an event that's actually happening near you, I strongly recommend having fun, trying it, going your way yourself. Check out howtobrew.com just by getting John Palmer's book and taking it right there. It's a great place to start. Or check out some earlier episodes of this if you need some inspirational fodder. Maybe we get into some things. Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
But also that same day, if you're in the neighborhood, at the Well, Brew for a Cure, one of the homebrew clubs, is putting on an event from Poor Standards of the Homebrew Club. They are in Richmond County, otherwise known as Staten Island. They're putting on a really great event called Brew for a Cure. And it should be really fun. Ooh, I'm wrong. It's not Poor Standards, actually. It's just a whole conglomerate of homebrewers. No, it is. It is. I'm right.
You're looking at me like
but
I know.
But at the Well, from noon to 5 o'clock, a bunch of homebrew from the neighborhood here, brewed here in New York City. And there will be a competition, both attendee choice and I'm judging as well. Probably about 25 to 30 different homebrews.
Cool.
Split down. I'm not tasting all. I will taste all 30, but I'm judging all 30.
How do you get tickets or check out that event?
Yes. Brewforacure.com.org.
All right. We'll get that by the end of the show.
Yes, I will. And that's all I got for you. But I'm really excited about today's guest.
That's right.
This is long overdue, or maybe I've apologized in the past before. Our guest is Peter Yee. Peter, welcome to the show.
Hi.
You are here from Brooklyn Cider House, and I first met you. You came to my birthday party 2 years ago. Do you remember this? 2.5 years ago, Lindsay dragged you to my birthday party when I turned 40, and I had a cask at this party. And I think
it was someplace in Greenpoint.
It was the Diamond. Yes. It was the Diamond. And you know, you guys got there a little late. I'd been hanging out pretty hard. And I think my introduction to you was I gave you wet willies in your ear. I was involved in the staring contest from across the bar, and that was the thing that broke the person across the bar. But my hello to you was not a handshake. It was licking my fingers and putting them in your ear. And I'm really sorry about that.
I call that the in sobriety. Hello.
That was a coup. They call that the Kuzmi hello. Anyway. It's great to have you here, and it's really been really awesome to watch what Brooklyn Cider House has done. It's been really great to taste it throughout the way. But how did this all begin? Who are you? And let's start.
Well,
all these places.
First of all, thank you for the invite. And my story started about 5 years ago when I was on a wine trip. So I was buying wines in Europe and going around from region to region, tasting wines. And when I was at a wine region in the Basque region, so I often go to the Basque region to taste Txokoliz, which is a very, very popular wine there that's very food-friendly. And while I was there tasting through Txokoliz, a friend of mine invited me to partake in a cider house dinner. And I didn't really want to go because I had cider before many times. And it was not something that I was too fond of.
What were your perceptions of cider? I mean, why were you not fond of it? What were the flavors of the cider that at that time that you thought cider was that you did not like or did not care for?
Well, I didn't think it was food friendly. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was terribly complex, and I thought it was just, you know, fairly simple, straightforward beverage that, it was not very interesting up until that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I was reluctant, but I took the offer, and I decided to go to a cider house. So cider house, basically, in in the Basque region, it's a cidery. But along with a production facility, they also produce incredible food. So it's a cidery slash restaurant in one. So I visited a cider house, and while I was there having food and cider together simultaneously, blew my mind. It was just a moment that I thunderbolt, you know, moment where I just didn't understand why it took me so long in my life to discover cider. Sure. It was that incredible. It was so impactful that I told myself that I'm gonna be in this cider world, and I gave up my wine 25 years of being in the wine industry. And
what was your role in the wine industry then?
What was my
goal? The role?
Yeah. My role was to eat great food, taste top 10% of the wines produced in the world. So I would go and taste the previous vintage, the current vintage, and next year's vintage. Wow. So I would go and try the different wines from several vintages and select the one that I want to work with and go along with the really spectacular vintages and try to avoid the vintages that are spotty.
Gotcha.
So I would go select wines, buy wines, and sell wine. So I was involved in the retail aspect here in this country. And so too, back then, 38 states.
Wow.
So we specialized in a lot of European wines. Spain was one of my fortes, so I loved Spanish wines, and some of the really age-worthy Spanish wines were something that was a special passion of mine. So we were the only game in town, you know, 20 years ago. You know, if you wanted to buy a 64 Lario Alta 890, there wasn't a bunch of stores that would carry that, right. You know, but you know, we had that. So many people from across the country would order this special bottles of vintage Riojas and aged Vega Sicilia vintage Ribera del Duero's and stuff like that. So we had a very, very fun, interesting business, and loved every day up until I discovered cider.
Yeah. How many people is that business still up and running?
It's PJ Wine was the name of the company, and it's still doing well, but I'm no longer involved in PJ Wine, so I gave that that incredible job up, along with going to incredible restaurants and
sure,
just drinking wine for
when
work,
this
yeah.
when this snapped, when this clicked, and you're like, I want to be part of this world. What was the next step? Had you ever personally made a wine or a cider at the time?
I have never tried making cider because I had no interest up until that point. But wine, I definitely made wines in the past. I did a lot of blending. I made wine. I also own a vineyard in Argentina as well. So I definitely have some experience. I can't say that I'm the greatest winemaker, but I dabbled into.
But the principles of fermenting and
I think my specialty is probably blending because I'm a taster. So I think
I
that blending comes very easily to me.
Mm-hmm. So you decided to do this. You need to be in this. So you told your peoples that you're going down this road. How did you go down the road?
What road did you choose?
So I fell in love with cider, that one taste. It took me like seconds. It was like in a second I knew that I want to do this. Because I'm a taster. You know, my job is to discover, you know, great flavors. So I knew instantly that I wanted to do this. But I didn't know exactly how. And I thought about it for a while, and I came back, and my family said, "Peter, you're crazy." Mm-hmm. So, I thought, okay, it's not so different from making wine. And it pairs really well with food. So one of the things that the hook for me is the fact that the beverage, the cider, has to work really well with food. So it's almost as though I'm making a beverage that pairs well with food first. Before,
it's kind of working backwards.
Yeah, before, like, you know,
before making a sip,
making a beverage that, you know, that drinks well on its own. So
right.
Yeah. So anyway, so that component was very similar to wine. It also had lower alcohol. Cider has lower alcohol, so it's a little bit more friendly. So if you drink a bottle of cider versus a bottle of wine, cider is a little bit easier the next day.
Right.
So, but anyway, I came back and my family was like, Peter, are you serious? I mean, how good is this cider? Show me what you had. And I actually brought back some ciders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I tasted them on it. So I tasted my wife, and I tasted my sister and my brother. And they all tried it. I poured it for them. They tried it. And they kind of looked at each other and said, "Wow, this is what you want to make?"
Mm-hmm.
But I also... knew at that point, you can't do just a cider. If you do just a cider, the cider that we make, it's a very difficult cider to understand. And I think I told you before that I didn't like cider up until that moment, about 5 years ago. I've had cider, the same cider as the cider that I fell in love with before, but I didn't see the merits of the cider when I had it on its own.
Right.
Hmm.
But it was only when I had it with the food. It's kind of like wasabi. Mm-hmm. If you've never been to a Japanese restaurant before, or never had Japanese food before, and someone offered you just a wasabi without the fish, without the soy sauce,
mm-hmm.
Would it be easy for you to get the wasabi?
Right.
No.
Yeah. It's the same thing, I think, with this natural cider. Many of my friends that are in the wine business and in the cider industry tried the cider and they didn't like it because it takes getting used to.
Sure.
People don't, you know, normally get into, like, bitter chocolate or, mm-hmm. or like real coffee or wasabi or natto,
yeah.
You know, or even beer or wine, you know, it takes many tries to really understand it. And this cider for me, it's one of the things that I actually like is because you don't like it instantly.
Mm-hmm.
It takes tries. But when you get it, it's really incredible. So The experience that I had with the cider in the Basque Country is actually the same experience I had 30 years ago when I fell in love with wine. So, you know, I tried a bottle of Clos Vougeot, and it was just this Burgundy that I just got it. It was after so many bottles of wine that didn't really do anything for me. Then I tried this Burgundy, and it was just magic. It was like the first kiss. So yeah. It was so special, and I knew that I wanted to be in the wine business when I tried that Burgundy, and it's the same exact experience with the cider. So,
do you remember what types of foods were at that first cider house? And you didn't start immediately with a food place here in Brooklyn. What was the step that? Well, two questions. One is, what kind of food was what made that click? And then second is, so now your family's convinced. What was the next step? To now.
So it took some convincing, but they were okay with the fact that I am going to move on with my career and mm-hmm. And start this venture. But so my sister and I, both of us, quit our jobs and we decided to do this full time, and then we set off to do this project, and we just couldn't get the ingredients that we need to make the cider. So, mm-hmm. What's the most important ingredient? It's the apples, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So apples, getting the apples here in Northeast is very, very, very difficult.
Yes.
So, my sister and I went and, made phone calls after phone calls and, with no luck. And we decided to really plant our own orchard, because that was the only logical thing. I want to make cider. I can't get the apples. Let me plant trees mm-hmm. to produce the right fruit. So that kind of led me to a different area. Beginning. And that now not only am I making cider, now I have to be a farmer. And farming is it's different, and I don't have any experience with growing apples. I have some experience with growing grapes, but not with apples. It was very challenging. We managed to plant 8,000 trees in New Paltz, and I think we'll have some decent quantity apples in short time. So mm-hmm. we actually before getting the land, we actually acquired cuttings and the trees. So mm-hmm. we had the trees that were all set. So we got the cuttings and sent it to a nursery, and then we didn't have any place to plant them. So we were forced to find a home for these 8,000 trees. So mm-hmm.
But you did up in New Paltz, and how many acres?
It's 200 acres, 200 acres? Okay. and 100 acres is used for cultivating mostly apples, and then 100 acres is used for just wild land mm-hmm. for keeping the native bee population up.
Great.
And all the beneficials, so mm-hmm. Insects and. So it's a nice balance there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And does by default do you become a farm? Aren't you under a farm license? Do you have to apply for? I don't know.
We apply for. Side. Yeah, okay. we have a farm cidery license.
Cool.
Very cool. What kinds of apples did you plant, and how did you decide which ones to do since you had no experience in cider making previously?
After I fell in love with the cider from the Basque Country, I tried ciders from all over the world and trying to discover and understand apples. And I realized that it's actually not so different in cider as in wine. So I tend to like ciders that are actually high in acidity. Mm-hmm. I like dry cider, and it should be balanced and structured. And structure comes from tannin. So I knew that I needed, you know, two of the most important components is really acid and tannins. Mm. And you don't have that in the table apples. In the table apples, you get only sugar. So, actually, that's not true. You get some acidity, but, you know, medium quality acidity.
My next question was going to be about the cider we're drinking, but we're going to take a really quick break. Thanks for listening to Ferment About It.
Today's program was brought to you by Le Creuset, the first to pioneer colorful enameled cookware over 90 years ago. They've been a favorite for generations through the meals and memories the cookware creates and the style it expresses. My name is Kat Johnson. I'm the communications director at Heritage Radio Network. When I'm not making food radio, I'm making food, and my favorite cookware is the 8-quart marine blue Dutch oven that never leaves my stovetop. Before we got our Le Creuset, the cookware we used most often was an antique Griswold cast iron pan. It didn't take long for me to realize how much I'd been missing enamel cast iron in my life. Le Creuset has the superior heat retention of cast iron, but paired with the unparalleled performance and ease of enamel. That means delicious food with easy cleanup. Head to lecreuset.com/HRN, that's LECREUSET.com/HRN, to see all the new products and amazing holiday gift deals. HRN listeners will get 20% off the new Le Creuset cookbook with the code HRN.
Welcome back to Ferment About It. It is November 1st, 2018, and here in the studio we have Peter Yee of Brooklyn Cider House. Thanks for again for joining us. We very much enjoyed the first half of this whole operation, talking about what brought you here. But now you're here, and we have in front of us a cider that you poured for us. Can you tell us about this cider?
Sure. The cider that you're drinking is called Solstice. And the Solstice is a Basque-inspired cider, but something slightly different happened. So it's kind of a accident that happened, but it's a good accident, not a bad accident. So it picked up some different characteristic. We isolated it and bottled it. So it's a little bit funkier than your typical Basque cider, mm-hmm. and there's definitely a touch of that Brett mm-hmm. that kind of comes through a little bit, but it's not huge amount. It's just a touch of Brett, and we kept it under control. And you know, it's a Basque cider with you know, just a extra funk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's get into the nitty gritty a little bit. So what is a Basque-style cider compared to, like, any other kind of cider? And what exactly happened to this batch?
I think that, with a Basque-style cider, typically the difference is it goes through a fermentation without the use of sulfur. So it's a very similar practice as natural wine. So during the primary fermentation, it's just, you know, we don't add any sulfites or anything else to it. And it goes through a very natural fermentation. So it can get a little bit funky. It's a little bit different each and every year. You never really know exactly where it's going. And we try to pick it up whenever it's a little bit, if it goes too dark, too deep, then we try to either isolate it or we try to bring it back. You know, at that point, when it gets really funky, we might think about adding some SO2.
Okay. Yeah, so what's the process from like start to finish?
So start to finish. So yeah. So basically, you know, cider, you harvest the apples, you crush the apples, you start the fermentation. So once you have the juice, you want to ferment it. So Bass cider, you don't add SO2. Mm-hmm. With the conventional cider, you'll add SO2. And the difference is the SO2 will kill off a lot of the natural yeast if you add it. If you don't add the SO2, then it kind of encourages the natural yeast to ferment. Natural yeast, how is that different from a yeast that you add? It gives off slightly different flavors, and the flavors could, some people really like it, some people don't. It is sometimes unusual, and many times it's unpredictable.
So like what happened with this batch?
Yeah, with this batch, it kind of went to the dark side, and
I think in a beautiful way. I mean, I'm drinking it. I really enjoy the acidity and the funkiness that in a balanced way. There's still some back sweetness on that kind of rounds it all out that I very much enjoy. And the carbonation cutting through.
Carbonation is it's just a natural carbonation. Yeah. It's actually a still cider, so it's actually a flat cider, but it has natural carbonation that on its own.
Yeah, it's like maybe one volume CO2.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice.
It's the acidity also that's kind of bringing it.
Yeah.
So how many different types of ciders are you doing then, like as Brooklyn Cider House?
We have 5 labels, but we make a lot of ciders. Every year we'll make, I don't know, many different ciders. This year we're going to probably make a 5 that for sure that we're going to make, and then we'll make somewhere between 5 and 20 different ciders that we may or may not. It's all like experimental stuff. So if we like it, if we like the experimental cider, we'll try it again the following year, and then make a larger batch. And if we like it again, then we'll either add it on as our regular cider, or keep growing that production. Going back to your question, Michelle. So the Bass cider, I think that one of the major difference between a Bass cider and the non-Bass cider is there is this slightly funky character. And typically Bass cider is very dry, but it's different than the conventional ciders. Although it's dry, it's also like it goes through this I call it the microbial fermentation. So it goes through a third fermentation. So most ciders go through one fermentation. Then there are some ciders that go through two. So the first fermentation that all ciders go through is called alcoholic fermentation.
Right.
The second fermentation that some ciders go through is called malolactic fermentation. Mm-hmm. Then the third fermentation that the best ciders go through is the microbial fermentation. So that's a fermentation that takes place that's similar to like kimchi or kombucha or sauerkraut. So it goes through a third fermentation, which is, it actually pickles the cider. But that pickling, that cider or microbial fermentation, what that does is that makes that cider super friendly with food. It actually screams food when you drink the ciders that go through that third fermentation.
Huh. Wow. Yeah, so speaking of food, you do a lot of interesting pairings at your cider house. Like, it's your whole, like, kind of raison d'etre to pair cider with food. So tell us a little bit about the food and cider going on at Brooklyn Cider House.
So the food in the Brooklyn Cider House, it's inspired from the Basque region, because my favorite food happens to be the Basque food. And I fell in love with the Basque cider. So before falling in love with the Basque cider, I was in love with Basque food.
Hmm.
So, it's the place where I spent a lot of time. So I love the food there, and I actually cook a lot of Basque food at home because I am in love with the food. And because my experience, the cider experience, was so profound, I wanted to actually reproduce my experience from the cider house there. So the cider house is really known for incredible chuleta or the steak. So we have a porterhouse steak that we grill. And it's just simple preparation. It's made without butter. It's a natural beef from Cedar River Farm. And it's just simply grilled with sea salt. And we use like Argentine style sea salt. Mm-hmm. It's just absolutely juicy and tasty. It's spectacular. But also we do like a tortilla de bacalao. Tortilla is not made with corn. It's actually it's kind of like an omelet. So it's an egg-based dish, and we add cod. Bacalao is dry cod. So it's a traditional way of preserving fish. So back in the old days, before refrigeration, it was difficult to store fish. So, the Basque people have figured out how to store fish. And drying, salted, then drying on process. And we use that, the same bacalao from very cold waters from Iceland.
Oh.
And then we bring it in whole, and then we desalt it for 3 days, and then pick it by hand, and then we make a tortilla, traditional tortilla de bacalao. So it's a it's incredible dish. So the fish actually going through this drying process, it tastes like crab meat. So if you're, if you're into like crab meat, it's spectacular. So it's like egg and crab meat.
Wow.
I have questions there regarding desalting a dried salted fish. What is that process? Is it just to soak in water?
Well,
it's like space fish.
Well, You have to. It comes really dried and really super salty. Mm-hmm. So you can't just consume this, right out of the, straight. So you have to really start this desalting process, and it's basically you have to change the water. So you give a lot of water to this fish. And let it hydrate and release the salt, and you have to keep changing the water.
Right.
And there's a I didn't know this, but I found out from the grandmas from and because I tried to get this information from like the restaurants, and they were like, no, we're not giving you this information. So I found out from the grandmas that. The best way to desalt the bacalao is you have to keep the skin side up.
Uh-huh.
So you keep the skin side up and you change the water 3 times a day. So 8 hours a day,
oh my God.
Change the water, and then 3 days, you're good. But also, there is an art. So not every piece is 3 days
equal, right? Not,
yeah, so
not equal.
Some are a little more, some a little less, and mm-hmm. you have to play with that to really, to figure out what is the optimal. So each piece, you have to take a look at it and see, oh yeah, this is definitely a 3.5 day bacalao.
Sure.
Or yeah, so sure. We actually sort it, and then we put it in water, and then after 3 day plus, you have incredible bacalao.
And then to that regard, we just discussed two different dishes, but you have five core
right.
ciders. Sure. Which ones would you pair with each one of these?
There's also the vegetables. I love vegetables, and especially when it's in season. So we have this. Grilled vegetable dish that we serve with chorizo, or mm-hmm. For vegetarians it would be without the chorizo, but it's grilled. We currently do like Roma beans, and we do Brussels sprouts and
the
whole garlic.
Whole garlic roasted is good.
Yeah, so carrots and. We're going to add, I think starting tomorrow, we're going to add some squash
because
it's
very
in
nice.
Season
it's
now.
Season, so,
yeah.
So yeah, we have that. We also do a cheese course with walnuts, and I love cheese and walnuts. And most people don't know how to like eat a whole walnut. We don't serve walnuts. That's already
deshelled.
You gotta have to get a nutcracker.
I think it's fun.
It
a whole
is
lot
totally
of fun,
fun
to learn how to break open a walnut.
I have small hands.
It's okay.
Yeah.
I like my walnuts deshelled. But yeah, so what would you of your ciders? What would you pair with those particular foods?
And why? What's happening there?
Yeah.
When you have the experience there with the prefix menu, you're having all different forms of the raw. So mm-hmm. you catch cider from the giant barrels that we have. We have some barrels that are like 3,500 gallon barrels that are made from chestnut wood. So you there's a spigot, and you catch we open the spigot, and you're catching the cider from the barrel, and you have you catch the cider in between courses. So you don't wait for food, you actually go catch cider and you socialize,
mm-hmm.
and then when your food is ready, you go back and have the next course. So this experience, I didn't invent this experience. This is experience that I had that made me fall in love with cider. So and this was like in middle of like nowhere in the mountains in the Basque region. but I thought this could really be fantastic. So,
for sure.
You know, you're walking around. You're not just sitting in one place the whole night during your dining experience. You're actually moving around. So you get to actually speak to the people that are sitting maybe a little bit further away in your table. You're also getting to chance to meet some of the people that are sitting across, you know, like not your table, but a different table. Because once you have some cider in your system, you're much more relaxed and you're just kind of, you know, having fun and, you know, you're bumping elbows with a lot of cider in your system. And it's a very friendly environment. You know, everything is very casual and relaxed. And you know, every time I go to a cider house in the Basque region, I make a ton of friends. It's a great place to meet people.
You've created a really great environment over there for that. They're definitely feeling all those things.
Yeah.
So when you do the that course, you've got these different ciders going on per course, mm-hmm. right? Some of the ciders you have are a little bit more acidic than others. This one's funkier. With the meat, what characters do you like going through that?
With the meat, we currently are serving the cider from the name of that cider is called Goldilocks, and the Goldilocks is actually it's at a really great time right now because it's the ripest cider, and when I say the word ripe, I think people don't really understand what I mean when I say ripe. It doesn't mean that the apples were really sweet when I harvested them. Right. What it means is the third fermentation is really at the right time. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't need to, it doesn't need any more time. So you're drinking it at the optimal time. So it's actually just before bottling. Typically more tart ciders go well with meat. Mm-hmm. And it's really incredible how well the cider and the steak works together. Like I would not, if I was not in this business and you know, yeah. and I was in wine and someone would tell me this, I would not believe them.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, I don't want to be drinking white beverage with
this dark red.
Yeah. Red meat, thing. But it works so well. I don't think red wine would work better than the cider. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can certainly say with some confidence that it's just as good as red wine, if not better. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We often do some, or well, not often. Mary and I used to do a lot of food and beer pairings, and we're still doing that.
Still
but
do
we
lot,
used
yeah.
to do used to do occasionally. We would do like maybe once a quarter. We'd do a wine versus beer kind of course. Thing. So Mary and I would pick our beers for the courses, and then a different wine person would do the wines, and we always won, of course, because you know I think beer is better with food, and apparently so do the people we were dealing with. You know. But I have never done it with cider, or not with that sort of intention. So this, I'm not throwing down a glove and challenging at all, but not yet. What next for the cider house? What are
yeah,
the moves
what's going on?
And so you have the cider house that you've built here in Brooklyn. How old is it? And the reaction has been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's been beautiful.
We opened it December of 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have a one year anniversary very soon. So. Mm-hmm. What's new and exciting? We are canning some cider.
That's
very
exciting.
Soon.
Oh, wow.
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
Right now, you do have bottles in stores, and they're generally 750 milliliter.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, well, we have 750, but we also have kegs and
okay.
We have 12 ounce as well, but we'll be canning very soon. But you know, right now we're we're only in New York State, so upstate New York and New York City, but we have just sold our first pallet of cider to Japan.
Hey, all right.
That's kind of exciting. And
most of the production is happening upstate too, right? For these.
Yeah, we actually produce in three different locations.
Okay.
So our location here in Bushwick. We also make cider up in Geneva, and also Lafayette. So, you know, two upstate locations and one here in Bushwick.
Can you visit the locations?
Mm.
You can visit your orchard, right?
Well, you can certainly, I mean, we certainly welcome you here in Bushwick, but the other locations are
just production. Rent.
Well, it's not our space.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
So it's a rental. Yeah.
But the orchards are in New Paltz.
Right. Oh, the New Paltz.
Yeah.
And New Paltz, we're going to also, you know, we'll definitely make that into a cidery as well. So it's a place for production in the future, but it's not ready yet because all the equipment from there we have moved to Brooklyn.
Okay. Okay.
So
okay,
there's no equipment there now at this time.
Take it.
So in a few years, I'm sure that that's going to take place.
I've only seen pictures of the big red barn.
So up at the orchard, what you can find at the orchard is lots of apple trees, and the baby apple trees, 8,000 newly planted apple trees that should start producing maybe next year. Some food there. There's a pavilion, so we do wood fire foods. We attempt at making some pizza up there with wood fire, and we do some simple grilled foods up there. Oh, the other thing I wanted to let you know is during the Cider Week, we are having this incredible tasting on Sunday, the 11th. We'll have a bunch of people from the cidery, around 20 different cideries. So they're going to show up. And
you're doing that at the Brooklyn Cider House. I did read about that.
Yeah.
I think at 1100. Going.
Yeah.
Yes.
In Bushwick. So. Yes.
It's free, right?
It's free, and it's I think it's 11 to 4.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
this is gonna be awesome.
Yeah. Get there at 9.
I'll try to get there early because I can't guarantee, you know, if you come late. Sure. So, yeah, that's happening, and then in the evening time there is dinner where we're going to do cider food and cider pairing. So it'll be more kind of attention to detail type of food, but and with a lot of really special ciders that really everyone's bringing.
Yeah, very exciting. Sounds really great.
We're just about out of time with all of this.
Yeah, so Peter, where can people find you on the internet, or people find your cider house on the internet or wherever? Also, where is it located? I know we said Bushwick, but
The location is 1100 Flushing Avenue. Our website is brooklyncederhouse.com. And you can find us on our website. There's a list of all the different vendors that carry our cider. Right now, it's really only available in New York City. New York State. New York City and state.
Thanks for doing
what you do. Oh, and I have if you want to... check out Brew for a Cure. It's at it's brewingupacure.org.
You could also go to thewellbrooklyn.com. They have all their events there.
You can also Google Brew a Cure.
Brew for a Cure. All right. Thanks for listening.
Thank you so
about
much.
It. Peter Yee. Cheers. Foment about it.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.